Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Hastings Harvest, where I interview some of the most inspiring young minds, creators, and educators within their area of expertise and try to harvest how they go about their craft. And today, I am with Nick Coleman, another vegan fitness athlete that I met online. He is my e-friend. Is that even a saying? Probably. But you can probably guess as to what he does currently by what I said. He is a personal trainer online where he coaches clients, has like workout plans, meal plans, stuff like that. And then also on the side, he coaches clients to build a personal brand on Instagram, such as I do on my Patreon. So, you know, we have a lot in common and there is a lot to talk about. So in this podcast, we go over his insane transformation, basically a fat to fit transformation. If you guys check out his Instagram at Real Nick Coleman, you will see his transformation is pretty incredible. And then we go a little bit into the supplements he takes. He actually only takes one supplement and also his workout routine. And then we start getting more into personal development and the business side of things, how he converts cold leads into paying clients. If you have ever wanted to sell yourself basically online and have a personal brand online, we go over a lot of that stuff, and there's a ton of value in there about entrepreneurship and how you can get started. And he also talks a lot about his mentor and what his mentor has taught him. There's some pretty crazy things that I've never even thought to do on Instagram to actually get leads into actual customers. So look forward to that. And then we end off with his morning and nighttime rituals, some books that he's read that have really influenced his life, and a whole lot more. So hope you guys enjoy the podcast. If you want access to any of the resources that we go over in this podcast, because there's quite a bit, you can head over to seasonedtofu.com/podcast. That is seasonedtofu.com/podcast. Hope you guys enjoy the talk I had with Nick Coleman. Okay, Nick, thanks for being on the Hastings Harvest. I'm sure that my listeners are wanting to know a little bit more about you. So could you just give some background as to what you currently do right now?
Yeah, so I'm an online fitness coach in the vegan world, and I also do a little bit of business where I help fitness professionals establish a personal brand on Instagram and kind of provide them a way to create an income online.
Great. And we'll get a lot into the business side of everything very soon in the podcast. But first, I want to kind of just talk about how you came to adopt this lifestyle. So can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? I know you had a really insane transformation from being a meat eater to vegan. I've seen it before, and I'm sure if my listeners want to go see that, they can go check out your Instagram and stuff like that, which I will link in the show notes. But could you just tell us a little bit about what your childhood was like and what kind of influenced you to maybe make bad decisions about your diet, and then what influenced you to, you know, start actually taking diet seriously and living a healthy lifestyle?
Okay, so I actually grew up like pretty poor. So I always had to eat everything that was on the plate. Mm-hmm. And then we got to a point where we weren't like poor anymore, you know what I mean? And I would still eat all the food on my plate, and I would eat everything. Mm-hmm. So I kind of gained weight because I was able to put more food on my plate, and I would just eat it all. And then I would eat like my wife's leftovers. She wasn't my wife at the time. We'd go out to eat, and I would eat like her leftovers because I didn't believe in wasting food.
Right. And then what was the catalyst to you actually deciding, you know what, I really want to change my physique, change the way I look, and start getting into fitness?
So I was actually very athletic growing up until I I turned about 16, I think I quit playing all sports. And I mean, I would still play every now and then, but it wasn't an organized sport. And I always had like a very athletic build. But then, like we discussed earlier, I ended up getting fat because I quit all the sports and then did all that other stuff. And it just wasn't who I was. And I was like, you know, I got to a point where one day I was just like, you know, I was 235 pounds at 5'7". Definitely wasn't a good time in my life. And I decided it was just time to make change.
And did you adopt a fitness type of lifestyle and a vegan lifestyle simultaneously, or did one come first?
No, so I adopted the fitness lifestyle about 4 years before I adopted the vegan lifestyle.
Okay. And what was the moment that you decided to go vegan? I know a lot of vegans have maybe a movie that was the biggest thing for them, or just a video or audio, something like that, an interview. Was there anything like that for you? What was the biggest influence on you to adopt a plant-based diet?
Yeah, so for me, it was about the animal cruelty thing. I'm not somebody who's going to watch videos or watch documentaries, or even like, I wouldn't even like see any of the images of animals suffering. I just like mentally knew that I was contributing. Like, I couldn't stand eating animals anymore because I was actually, I did like a keto cycling diet for like 4 years as like a bodybuilder. And I always said to myself, if I could ever figure out a way to do this without harming animals anymore, I was going to do it. And that's actually, I found Tor Washington, and that's who I saw him, and I was like, oh, if he could do it, I could do it. And then I just stopped eating meat overnight.
So you mentioned that you did keto cycling. So I'm pretty curious to know how that worked out for you. And if you, do you still do that as a vegan? Like, do you do keto type stuff? Do you believe in keto still?
I'm very flexible with my diet now. Basically, if I want to get into like bodybuilding condition, like super lean and peak, I will manipulate my carbs, but typically I am eating mostly carbs with like, you know, a little bit of protein and some healthy fats, like a pretty well-rounded plant-based diet.
Okay, so when you really want to get lean, you cut carbs a little bit?
So typically, I mean, you know, I'm pretty lean year-round as it is, but if I want to get like extremely lean, like dip down into single digit body fats and look like somebody who's about to be on stage in a competition, I will manipulate my carbs and I will eat higher fats and higher proteins. And I just like being able to kind of like be in control of my glycogen storage when that happens, because then I'm able to fill up on my carbs again when it's time to fill up on carbs, and then I will appear a lot more muscular and vascular.
Okay. Can you explain that a little bit more for the listeners about glycogen stores and why cutting carbs allows you to look leaner and actually be leaner?
Yeah, I could try.
Okay.
So, basically, when you have the glycogen in your system all the time, typically we have like more than we need. So in order for me to cut down and look like I'm ready to step on like a bodybuilding stage, I have to get rid of the excess glycogen. And to do that, I lower my carbs.
Okay.
And then, you know, when I want to look fuller in that same time period, I try to eat the right amount of carbs so that I don't go over.
Okay. All right. And I'm super interested because every time I see someone like you who's done a fat to fit transformation, they always have like a lot of loose fat or loose skin just after, but like they're obviously still a very low body fat percentage. And I don't know if you ever had that, and maybe I just haven't seen it. And I kind of just was too late to the party when I actually met you online. But did you ever have that period where you had that loose skin? And if you didn't, then why is that? Why do some people have that, and why do some people not?
Yeah, so I think that has to do with the dramatic weight loss. Like, because I am still 70 pounds lighter, and I actually did lose that weight really fast. But then I spent a few years building muscle to kind of fill out that space. And I still do have loose skin, but nobody really sees it but me, because it's not that noticeable. Unless I'm like sitting down or in an awkward position, you won't see it. I do have some on my stomach. I have some loose skin on my arms, but my arms are pretty, I don't want to say they're like huge or anything, but they're pretty big now. So they filled that out.
Yeah.
And I do have some loose skin on my thighs, but my thighs are pretty large as well. So I've kind of been filling that out.
Okay. So the muscle helped a lot with that. Okay. So you honestly have one of the best physiques I've seen in the vegan fitness community, honestly. And I'm really curious as to what you do for your workout split, or like how often do you work out a week?
Okay, so typically, and I appreciate that, that means a lot, but typically I work out 6 days a week on the push-pull leg split. And I'm all about efficiency. I'm sure you see me talking about it. So I always start with some larger compound movements for strength. And then I go and work my way down through the smallest muscle for whatever. So for back, that'll be like my rear delts is the last thing I hit. Mm-hmm. And I don't really waste too much time either. I'm only in the gym for about 40 minutes. I hate cardio because I used to be a fat kid, so you will never see me running.
Yeah, I don't. Honestly, I don't do cardio either. I know I really should, but it's just like running on the treadmill, running on the elliptical or something like that. It's just, I would so much rather do sports, and I wish I still did sports and played sports, because I also played sports as a kid, and I was a really athletic kid. I played like soccer and baseball and hockey, which is something I don't think my listeners really know about me, which is cool. But I don't know. I guess I prioritize the gym over that stuff. Like, I could be doing sports more, but after the gym, which is what, well, I'm going to the gym like 5-6 days a week, like you are, it's like, I want to recover a little bit. Like, I don't want to go and play a sport afterwards. So it's kind of, if I want to play sports more, I'm going to have to not work out as much and lift as much. And like, it's so hard to get myself to say, just do something fun as your cardio, as your fitness today. But, you know, I digress. I don't know if you've ever had that problem.
I haven't really played sports in years, so I haven't really had that problem, because typically what I do is I just work out in the gym. And like I said, my workouts are pretty short, so I'm not really too exhausted after them either.
All right. So I want to underscore for the listeners the point you said about starting with compound movements and then working your way down, because that is how I do it, and that's how I believe everybody should do it. You want to be at your most strong for your basic compound lifts, because these are the lifts that are going to produce the most results for you. You can't just be doing isolation exercises just cable exercises, because it's not putting enough weight on the muscles. It's not overloading the muscles enough for progressive overload. So I suggest that everyone starts off with their heaviest compound lift and works their way down to cable and isolation exercises at the end of their workout, like you do. Now, you do 40 minutes in the gym, which is pretty impressive. I honestly need to get down to that low, because, you know, I don't like talking to people in the gym. I don't like being in there for a long time, because, you know, I want to do other things with my day, even though I love it. So how many exercises do you usually end up doing?
I think about 5 or 6.
Okay. And how many sets is it usually?
So that will all vary depending on where I'm at in my training phase, like which, because I've run through a few different phases. Typically it's 6 sets for like my first exercise or 7, and I'm focusing more on strength, where I'm actually not going to failure at all. I'm just focusing on like some incremental strength gains throughout the next few weeks in whatever specific rep range that I'm working in. And then I will do 5 sets of like 8 to 10 or 10 to 12 or 12 to 15, depending on where I'm at in my training phase as well.
Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit more about veganism and kind of what it means to you. So what was your body and mind's initial reaction to going vegan, and how does it make you feel now? Is there any difference? And like, what is the biggest change maybe that you've noticed in your body and mind since going vegan?
So I can't really comment too much on how different I felt physically, because the only real physical difference I noticed was that my stomach felt lighter. And
okay.
I didn't really have like any complications with it because, like I said, I was bodybuilding for 4 years already. So for me, it was just like, you know, this is what I was eating. All of a sudden, this is what I eat now. And I just kind of made the switch like completely overnight. And I would think that my mind has been a lot better because, like I said, it was an animal cruelty thing for me. So I would actually like literally have a mental battle like every day as I was eating chicken. And I was just like, I felt like a complete piece of shit doing it. Cause I always consider myself to be like an animal lover. You know, you can't be an animal lover if you're pounding out chicken a day.
Eating animals. Right. There's that contradiction. Typical. I completely agree with you. I have kind of experienced the same thing. I feel like a lot of the reason, I've said this before in a previous podcast, but I feel like a lot of the reason that a vegan diet makes me feel so good is just because of, I know how much good I'm doing, or how much good I'm doing to save the animals and like help towards eliminating animal cruelty. So not even just the food itself, it's even like just the fact that I'm helping the animals. What do you wish you would have known when starting veganism?
I wish I would have known to take a B12 supplement.
Okay, yes, that's huge.
So that's like the biggest thing I wish I would have known, because I didn't take one for a long time, but I mean, I was consuming a lot of like energy drinks and things that have B12 in them back then, but I wasn't actually taking like a B12 supplement. And I think I would have liked to know what benefits there is to being a vegan, kind of like before I did it, like benefits for like the environment and my health, because I kind of just went into it for like, I don't want to eat animals anymore. And I didn't really do any research aside from like, what do I have to eat to maintain my muscle mass or build?
Well, I mean, that's awesome. Usually it takes so much more than that to get someone to transition to that. So, I mean, knowing more things would have been helpful, but yeah, that's awesome. And the B12 thing is so important. I know most vegans know that they should be taking B12, but it absolutely needs to be taken, probably, I would say, 500 micrograms every other day, somewhere around that range. That sounds pretty good to you. That's pretty much what I take.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what I take, to be honest with you, because my mother-in-law is a plant-based doctor.
Oh, wow.
She would take this, so I just take it.
Okay, nice. So in terms of supplements, what other supplements do you take in terms of just overall health and then also fitness related supplements.
So this is going to be, this might catch you off guard, but I don't take any supplements besides B12.
Wow. Okay. I'm impressed. I'm impressed. That's good. Honestly,
I will take a pre-workout though, like from time to time, if I feel like I need the energy and I just kind of like feeling like, you know, I like the feeling of being like jittery or tingly in the gym.
Right. Yeah. What about creatine? You don't believe in it?
It's not that I don't believe in it. It's definitely beneficial, but I'm just very like simplistic and like minimalist in the fact that I don't really need it. So I'm not going to take it.
Okay. So every time I interview a vegan on this podcast from now on, I want to kind of get their definition on veganism and what type of vegan they are, what they believe veganism is. So I talked about this with Fitzy. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you know him. Okay. So I asked him, I was like, what guidelines do you think you have to meet in order to be considered vegan? So, 'cause like there's people who have leather that they bought before they were vegan and they're still wearing it when they're vegan. And it's like, it's the only thing that they can really wear, maybe a belt or something. Like it's the only belt that they have. Does that make them not vegan? Like what do you need to be in order to be vegan? Like what are the guidelines? What do you think?
Yeah. So for me, I think that as long as you're not doing any harm to animals going forward, anything that you have in the past that is leather or some type of animal product is no longer, or is vegan now in a way. So I don't feel, I just don't think that we should be nitpicking on people for having old leather products, especially when if they buy a vegan leather product, nobody's going to know the difference. So they're still, you know, they're still like modeling that same industry, even though it's not the same product. So as long as they are not harming any animals going forward, then in my opinion, they're vegan.
I love that. And I completely agree. Are there any resources you suggest the listeners should check out if people listening aren't vegan yet and they want to learn more about veganism?
Yeah, I would suggest that they probably watch some documentaries on animal cruelty, like or even just like on like cowspiracy if they care about the environment. I think documentaries are huge because, you know, everybody has Netflix, it seems like, and I think they're available for free on the internet as well. And just follow some vegan people on Instagram that are giving out valuable information.
Like at Real Nick Coleman.
Yeah.
Exactly. So for me, it was What the Health that I think really impacted me too. But I don't know why I don't remember if I watched it before or after I was vegan. I think it was after I was vegan, but it still had a pretty big impact on me. And yeah, I think documentaries are one of the best ways for sure. Now I want to talk more about your business online. And so this is your full-time job is helping people create a personal brand online and then also training people, right?
Yeah. So it's more, actually like training people, and then the personal brand thing is just like a little side thing that I have. I created a course, so it's like more of a passive thing for me.
Okay. Yeah. So you created it, and now you don't really, people can pay for it and you don't really have to check up on it all the time. It's kind of just a passive income thing.
Yeah. And I'll communicate with them. It's not like I just leave them hanging, but it's not nearly as much work as I'm doing for fitness coaching.
Okay. And where can you find your stuff? Where do people pay for training or personal brand training from you?
So to get personal brand training from me, I'm going to have to. So the way that I do it is very different, and this is going to really blow some people's mind here. But what I do is I actually look at ads on Instagram. So like I find somebody's ad on Instagram who is selling fitness coaching business, like a fitness coaching business. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. somebody who is big in the fitness business industry and they teach other people how to grow a fitness business. And what I do is I actually send out cold DMs and okay. provide them some value. And then I sell to them in the DMs.
So you sell
so you will not to the anywhere.
So you sell the to the people who are running the ads? Is that what you're saying?
No. So I look at the people that engage with their ads.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see.
And then I send those people DMs and then, and then I kind of just like run them through like a little sales script and then get them to purchase.
I like that idea. I've honestly never heard of that. How, what do you keep track of the success rate of that?
Not really. So typically I'll just send out like 30 DMs a day and, I'm not really tracking the progress or the success at all. It's really just, you know, it could be like hit or miss depending on how they react to the message, if they even respond.
Okay. And what does that message usually look like? Can you give us a rough script?
Yeah, so
or do you not want to reveal your secrets?
I could say the first thing. So okay. Or the first two things I could say. So typically I'll say like I'll look at their profile and I'll be able to tell that they're a personal trainer and I'll just say, "Hey, like can you take on 3 to 5 new clients this month?"
Okay.
And if they say yes, then I just start talking to them about the product, or not really right away, but then I just kind of like build up, you know, conversation, and then I try to get them to buy.
Okay. And do you do the same thing for the training, or is that
no,
is there a different approach?
For training, I am doing active reach out or active outreach. I think that if anybody's going to be successful in the fitness business online, if they are not doing active outreach, they're missing out on like thousands of dollars. So even I know some more people who are more successful in the fitness industry than me, and they are also doing this, and if they're not doing this, they have somebody on their team that's doing it.
Okay, so the process is basically you DM these people who already have been engaging with your stuff and you ask them if they want to be trained by you, basically?
Basically you have to use, you have to make them understand that there's like a gap. I'm not too sure how to explain that. I work with, Jason Capital, and he works with Taki Moore, who does like this six boxing thing it's called. So I don't really know how much I can even talk about this, but in them and their fitness goals.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about how you actually get new followers on Instagram and how you formulate your posts. So is there a certain way or a certain tactic you use in your post to increase the engagement?
Yeah, so I believe that if you don't have good copy, nobody's going to follow you. Nobody's going to engage with you or even like your stuff. Hashtags are important to a point, but it's really all about like creating that shareable content that gets people to drop comments or share it with their friends or bookmark it, things like that. Because that's obviously going to help your reach.
100%. That's what I tell to people. I actually started a Patreon course on helping people build a personal brand online. And I talk about a lot about copywriting and how important it is to getting people's attention. You want to increase the attention on the post, and that's going to increase your engagement. So knowing how to formulate stuff, like knowing how to write well and knowing how to formulate a message coherently is so important. So if anyone is trying to get into Instagram and make posts daily and like actually grow a real big following, so important that you start copywriting really well. And so, you know, do your research on that. Is there anything else you do other than copywriting and hashtags?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll use influencers, but I think the most important thing to do that a lot of people are scared to do is to be extremely polarizing. So like you have to stand for something, because I don't remember who said this and it really stuck with me, but if you make content that everybody likes, nobody's going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make content that pisses people off, they're going to drop a comment and let you know why they're pissed. And that's going to boost your reach.
That is true. And yeah, having a really specific niche, so important. So I'm really glad you brought that up. What do you wish you would have known when starting out with Instagram and like actually trying to get clients?
So I wish that I would have known to be doing active outreach back then. I wish I would have known that, you know, I wish I would have bought a business mentor back when I first started, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it just helps so much more to have somebody who's there with you, who is going to guide you in the right direction. And they've probably been in your shoes as well.
Right. And it's also the motivation that they can give you. Like you have somebody to hold you accountable, which is such a huge part of it. And I wish I had that. I wish I had some sort of mentor right now, but I know I should stop trying to do everything by myself, because that's not, you need to have a good network of people. But eventually I'll expand out, but right now it's just a money crunch, and I know I'm seeing success right now. I know I could be more successful if I, you know, you got to spend money to make money. It's essentially is the golden rule of money in general, honestly. So yeah, that's definitely a good tip. But if people can't afford a mentor, YouTube is your friend. Gary V says Google is your mother. It makes sense. All the information, pretty much all the information you need is on the internet, but it's that accountability and that motivation from someone else that makes having a mentor so valuable. So yeah, definitely having a mentor.
And when I first got into this, the online business thing back in 2017, I actually just like blew like thousands of dollars on ads.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Without like even knowing good copywriting, without even knowing what to do.
I made no money.
Yeah.
Just spent like thousands of dollars on ads. And like, I should have taken that money and just got a mentor.
Right.
But I thought I had it figured out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do you think so many people give up pursuing being an entrepreneur?
I think it's a lot of work. A lot of people don't actually want to put the work in. I think a lot of people are doing it now because it's cool. And then once they realize you know, I'm going to have to work maybe 40 or 80 hours a week, depending on the week, you're going to have to do things you don't want to do. It's not going to be comfortable. And a lot of people aren't really they're not really about hustling like that. They'd much rather have somebody tell them what to do, when to do it, and when it needs to be done. And it's right. Scary to, like, you know, if you're not full-time entrepreneur, then you're starting something on the side, it's easier because you still have that sense of security. But if you're doing it on your own 100% and, you know, you're all in, it's a game changer. And that's some scary stuff. Not a lot of people are ready for it.
Yeah, it's definitely emotionally draining. I think people see the glamour of being an entrepreneur and like the way you can talk about yourself and like the way you look to your peers, like the superficiality of it. And they're like, that is what I want. But they don't want they don't want all the hours, all the shit that people aren't going to see that you're putting in each and every day to make it work. And yeah, it just makes people give it up.
Yeah, I mean, there were times where I was waking up at 4:30 a.m. and literally working until like 9 p.m. for like weeks on end.
Yeah, exactly. You almost definitely will have to put in more hours than you would if you were just doing a regular 9-to-5 job. You need to do more research. And like you said, a lot of it is about the comfortableness of it. Is like, it's just so much easier to get a job, to have someone to tell you what to do. It's just an easier lifestyle. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and it's not always going to be like that too.
Right. Right.
Getting past that hump.
Yeah. So at the start, it's always going to be the hardest. And that's when most people give up, is at the start. But mm-hmm. it's the consistency, doing something to just inch forward a little bit every single day adds up so much over time. And once people see that and look at the bigger picture, that's what I do, at least. Like, I look back, sometimes I get demotivated. I look back, I'm like, dude, look at what you were like 2 years ago when you just started. Like, you didn't know what the fuck you were doing.
And
now it's like, I still, like, you know, I kind of know what I'm doing, but I know more what I'm doing than back then. And I've made a lot of progress with everything. So it's motivating. And I just want to, it's addicting to keep that progress going and seeing what you can do, what you're capable of. So, yeah. So now let's just talk about some general stuff, some general personal development stuff. Do you have any morning or nighttime rituals?
Yeah. So I do have both. I have a morning ritual where I wake up. So I wake up and I do about 6 minutes of some type of like state training, whether that means I'll bark or take like a cold shower.
Bark?
Yeah, I will bark.
What? So tell me what that does.
So it just kind of, it's like a very primal thing, a very like freeing thing. And when you do it, it will raise your state.
Okay, I can see that.
And it's different too. So like, you know, it kind of takes some balls to bark, even if you're alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And I'll alternate though. So I'll do the barking thing. I'll do the contrast shower, and then I'll do the primal breathing that Tony Robbins does.
Okay. Can you explain what that is?
So you would like sit down and then breathe in through, you would put your hands up above your head, breathe in through your nose and blow out and bring your arms down to your side. And then just keep doing that up and down, up and down, up and down for 30 seconds on and then 30 seconds off. You do that for about 6 minutes.
I like that.
Yeah, so it's quick and it wakes you up. It has you moving and it makes your lungs working. Like, it gets your heart pumping.
Mm-hmm. Gets your blood flowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody should do something to get their blood flowing in the morning, like just to wake you up really quick, whether that's stretching, whether that's like, I don't know, doing 10 push-ups even, some type of work like that is definitely super important.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you do?
What's that?
Do you have anything else you do in the morning?
Okay. Yeah. So I'll do that for whatever I decide to do that day. It typically only takes me about 6 minutes. And then I go and I do some journaling. So I'll journal. I'll talk about 3 things that I'm grateful for. I'll talk about my 1 year goals, and then I will write down like who am I, like my identity for the day, what I'm going to accomplish.
Okay. I like that a lot. Can you explain that identity thing a little bit? Cause I've never heard someone do that like every single day.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, and this is something I got from my mentor, Jason, who, it's like we have this identity, and you know, it's really easy to lose your identity. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I'll just read you one.
Okay. Yeah.
So, this day I said, I will show up today and be the person who changes lives.
All good.
I will cross at least three things off my list for the course today. And that was when I was making my course. So it's just kind of like, just like talking about like just showing up and like who you're going to be. And one of my biggest issues has always been showing up, like showing up to do the work. So that I will always write that down, that I'm going to show up today.
That's dope. I love that. And then nighttime rituals.
Yeah. So I've tried a few in the past, and what I used to do, and I should actually add this back in, where I would do a recap. Have you ever heard of the 5-minute journal?
Yeah. Tim Ferriss.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would love that dude.
Yeah. Tim Ferriss is awesome.
Yeah. He's probably, he's the dude that got me started in all this. The first thing I read from him was Tools of Titans. And then I'm like,
nice.
Damn, dude. Yeah, like, I think that. I can do something with this.
Yeah.
So
4-hour work week was crazy too.
Yeah. I listened to the audiobook not too long ago. Wow. It's like a lot of books are very superficial and ambiguous with what they say in the personal development book space. Like they won't give you real applicable things to do, like very specific things. Like he gives you all the Google AdWords stuff, all the A/B testing things, like the concrete examples that are in that book is insane. Yeah, I don't think there's another book like it.
So the nighttime thing that I'll do is just a little 5-minute, like I was doing the 5-minute journal where you would talk about, I think you would talk about like three things that happened today that I could have done better. And then I don't even really remember what the second thing was. Do you know?
I think it's like three things that made today great. And then what could have made today better?
Yeah, that's it. And then I actually started doing something recently with my wife where we're doing a little journaling thing before we go to bed, where it's just like a random question and we both have to answer it.
Okay.
I think it's called like the Year of Us.
And what is?
I think it's called like the Year of Us or something like that.
What do the questions usually relate to?
It's very random. So the one day the question was something like, what would the perfect weekend getaway be with? Be like, what would be your perfect weekend getaway together?
Hmm.
So it's just things like that. And then obviously, most people are going to have two different answers because we're both writing an answer.
Right. I like that. That's nice. Any other nighttime rituals?
No, that's it for now. Like I said, I do want to get back into the journaling thing before night, that 5-minute journal thing. I noticed because if you write down the three things that could have been better, you're probably going to do them the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's...
So that's pretty much it for me on my nighttime routine. And I just make sure to make sure my alarms are set.
Right. Gotcha. What are the 3 to 5, if you even have 3 to 5, maybe even just one, books that have impacted your life the most?
So I actually give some books away when I get clients. And the ones that I always give away are Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins. The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. Or Higher Status by Jason Capital.
Mm. So I've heard of Awaken the Giant Within, and I've only heard good things about it. I love Tony Robbins' 4-Hour Work Week we went over. And that last one, what is that about?
So it's called Higher Status, and I've spoke about Jason Capital a few times because he is my mentor. Mm-hmm. But it's about status as like a human. Like we know that there's these different status levels that everybody has, and it's kind of
just a guideline on how you can become a high status person. And it doesn't mean money. It means like, you know, when somebody walks into a room and they command respect based on how they act, it's a book mm-hmm. that basically teaches you how to be that person, like how to be a likable person and things like that.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. It's kind of like forming the personality behind someone who is like that, essentially, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's kind of everything from body language to vocal tonality.
I think that would be a really good book for beginner wannabe entrepreneurs or wannabe people who just want to better themselves, because the stuff that I, this is what I recommend to everyone. Like at the start, I feel like you should just read personal development books like that, that are just going to change your personality and change it so that like you are the type of person that is a higher status person. And then as you go along in your journey, read books like The 4-Hour Workweek, where there's like more specific things. So I know I said like this, some books are superficial and like don't really give you real things to apply, but those types of books you actually should be reading at the start, I find, because you need to have the mindset first to actually apply the stuff from the specific books. So that sounds like a great book. What is something that you think is true that no one else agrees with you on? This is a tough one for most people.
That is a tough one. Something that I think is true that nobody else agrees with me on. That the earth is flat.
Really?
Nah, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I don't think
so. I was not going to be mad or anything or not say anything because I tried to keep an open mind, but I'm glad you were joking.
Yeah, I was just joking about that. I don't know. This is a really tough one, so.
That's all right. We can just move on from that one. When you think of the word successful, who's the first person that comes to your mind and why?
I think Tony Robbins. And I think it's because he's obviously financially successful, but he's changed so many lives, which adds,
right.
I feel like that's more important. Like the impact that you have in the world is more important than the money that you make. And he's
100%,
done both.
100%.
And he also started from like very humble beginnings.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with that. If you can make a meaningful impact and positively influence people's lives through your career, so you're making money off of literally bettering the world, that is being successful to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do. And I know you're trying to do the same. So I love that. So I think we're going to wrap it up here. I had a good time. I appreciate you coming on the podcast today. I hope you had a good time too.
Yeah, it was a great time, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And do you just want to plug your stuff right here at the end? Just give some usernames that where people can reach you.
Yeah, they could just add me on Facebook, my personal Facebook, Nick Coleman, or Nicholas Coleman, actually. You'll see some dude flexing and for the picture. Or just follow me on Instagram at Real Nick Coleman. I don't really have any other social platforms, but that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks.